to make hats, scarves, gloves, mittens, blankets, and such to help the Occupy Wall Street protesters better endure the cold weather. BAI Studios are serving as the collection point for both mailed packages and by-hand deliveries. To arrange a drop-off, call 212-209-2800. Otherwise, mail your handiwork to WBAI 120 Wall Street, 10th floor, New York, New York, 10005. Attention, wool. Come on, let's put some lids on some noggins. For more information, go to thumpandgrowl.com.
Put on your dancing shoes because, yes, it's time again to party and help the world. The third annual Freedom Dance takes place this year at Novo Bar Space, 884 Pacific, between Underhill and Washington in Brooklyn. Saturday, November 12th, from 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. This year, we celebrate Cisco Torres, the last remaining defendant in the now-defunct San Francisco 8 case. All charges were dropped, and Cisco is a free man. So come, eat, drink, and be merry, and get ready to dance in the third annual Freedom Dance. All proceeds are sent to U.S. political prisoners for commissary, legal costs, and the like. That's Freedom Dance, Saturday, November 12th, 8 p.m. to 2 a.m. at Novo Bar, 884 Pacific Ave in Brooklyn.
Yo, this is G-Love on WBAI, New York.
This is strange. I'm going to need some help on this. Oh, there's Yusef. Hey, Yusef.
Anthony, what's up?
What do you make of that?
Whoa. We're going to need some help on that. Hey, they're Smooth. Let's ask him what he thinks it is.
Yo, Smooth.
Smooth.
Hey, what's up, y'all? You look a tad bit bewildered.
Bothered and bewitched, too. Check it. Have you ever seen anything like that?
Like, whoa. It looks like it's getting bigger.
Too big for us.
Maybe we should call on the rest of BAI. They should know something.
Good idea. We can meet.
We better meet away from the station just in case that thing is contagious or something.
I know a place. 56 Walker Street, couple blocks down from Canal.
We could just figure out a date and time.
It looks like we have a little time. It doesn't seem to be moving too fast. I don't think that'll get here until late November.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI. The time is just about 7 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
Good morning. This Off the Hook. Manuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Mike.
Program is Off the Hook. You don't know the name?
Yeah, you know, I'm very flustered today, Mike. It's been a rough day. Off the Hook, yes. Any other critiques for this early on in the hour?
No? It's only been a minute. I'm sure I can come
it's
up with some.
It's been a second. Okay, Mike, that's enough from you. And Jim is here.
Hello.
And down in Philadelphia is Bernie S.
Greetings from Philadelphia.
Out in Seattle is Kyle.
Hi.
Well, okay, where do I start? Well, first of all, a couple of things. Today was the day of the dramatic emergency alert system test, a nationwide test. Bernie, can you maybe describe for the folks what this is all about?
Wow. It's sort of a successor to the old emergency broadcast system. Like, this is a test. This is only a test. If this had been a real emergency, you know, that kind of a thing. It's been going on since the 1950s. But this, the new incarnation of it, the emergency alert system, is designed to allow local, state, and federal authorities reach the public through mass media en masse. And this particular test today was the first nationwide emergency alert system test. It was set up to be from the White House and just supposed to be 3 minutes to most TV and radio stations and cable and satellite stations. But it was cut down to 30 seconds from 3 minutes, and it was the responsibility was handed over to FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Administration, maybe for political reasons, I don't know. And I think the commercial broadcasters probably didn't want 3 minutes of commercial airtime being used up for something so trivial. So, but I monitored it. Did you monitor it? What did you see?
I monitored it in a few places. I can tell you it did not work here at WBAI. We did not get the signal. I heard it on a couple of other non-commercial stations. I had CNN on. It did not come across on CNN.
Yep.
Well, of course, I was watching CNN on a Canadian dish, so maybe that had something to do with it. I was watching a Los Angeles television station and came across there with no sound. Mm-hmm. But you know what? That's only so much you can do in 30 seconds. I wasn't able to monitor anything else.
I know. It was a short time window to test. Did you listen to any radio stations while you were doing this?
Yes, I had WCBS on in the background, AM station. And they aired it pretty much at 2 o'clock. The thing I thought was interesting was it wasn't all instantaneous or simultaneous. Rather, it was basically different times.
I was twiddling through an analog AM and FM radio dial, like just scanning through the stations manually with a knob, and I was really surprised to find most stations on the air were not broadcasting the emergency alert system test. And I was flipping through. I was at my aunt's house, flipping through cable TV channels because I don't have a TV at my home. So I was flipping through cable channels, and most of them, even the broadcast channels, which are like retransmitted over cable, were not carrying it as well. I did land on a PBS affiliate here at WVIA, which is a PBS affiliate up here, and they were broadcasting. That was the only station I found that was broadcasting audio with the video, and the audio was horribly distorted, like it was like a radio that wasn't tuned properly or something. So,
well, what has happened in the past? This is the first nationwide test. There have been statewide tests, and what has happened in the past is that a station will relay to another station and to another station, and by the time it gets to about the eighth station, it's barely audible because so many generations have passed by. So maybe you were hearing something like that.
Well, yeah. What the emergency alert system has done since in recent couple years is it set up some different feeds. They set up a satellite feeds, both redundant uplinks and downlinks. And also last year they put into effect an XM satellite radio feed as well, downlink. So, you know, to get around from that, used to be there were only like a few dozen PEPs, like point of entry stations that would rebroadcast the main signal from the source to other radio stations, like you said, like a daisy chain thing. But with all these redundant sources of signal now, you would think that this test would have gone well. I was very unimpressed. I thought it was a failure, personally.
Yeah, well, you know, while we were speaking, Bernie, you might have heard some clicks on the phone.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's all about. But this printer in the back just printed out something, and that's got something to do with the emergency alert system.
Yeah, so it's alerting us to something.
You want
to
read what it says?
Should I tear off the tape?
I think you're allowed to read what it says, and we have to log it. Yeah, tear off the tape, and we'll log it in the official logs. But do tell the folks. I think the folks have a right to know what is coming across this system. Just read the last part, the last section or whatever.
Yeah, it says...
If there are any obscenities, please don't read those.
It says, alert received at 11:09:11, at 1906-31.
Which was just a couple of minutes ago.
Yeah, on monitor number one, a broadcast station or cable system has issued a required weekly test for Bronx, Kings, New York, Queens, and Richmond counties.
Okay, so that's our required weekly test, which has never aired before during our show. Just happened to air while we were talking about it.
No, no, no. It begins at 8:06 p.m.
Yeah, but it just happened.
Well, it's. Let me tell you what time it's not, and that's 8:06.
Somebody did not turn their clock back. All right, it's pretty obvious what that's all
but
about.
It also says it ends at 9:06. I don't believe in an hour-long test.
All right, you know, nobody really knows what's going on. But
what do I do with this now?
On that, well, you have to hold on to it because you ripped it off the official thing there. You're now responsible for it. I'm glad I didn't do that. A couple of things with this, and I don't want to spend too much time on this because we have so many other things to talk about tonight, but I understand there are some problems with some cable systems that are unable to tell people that it's a test. this story that I read said that they were worried that blind people might not know. They might just hear the sound, and they might not know that it actually was a test because apparently, or deaf people, handicapped people in general, might not know that that this isn't real. So it's have you ever heard anything quite so kludgy, Bernie?
No, I mean almost all the cable channels that I scanned across that I found were broadcasting the test had no audio. It was just a video screen. So I think it's silly. I think sightless people, sight impaired people, should be able to hear that there is a test going on or that there's a real emergency. I mean, this is ridiculous. But what do you think of the broader implications of something where the White House now has the ability, assuming the thing works, to reach a large percentage of the population immediately through all these TV, radio, cable, and satellite channels? I mean, this, I think, has potential for abuse. But on the other hand, I think it could be important if there really was a real emergency.
Well, it's a question of who it is that you want to trust and how many individuals do you want to give the ability or how many entities do you want to give the ability to override everybody's Big Brother broadcast or whatever it is they're doing with mass media. I found the part that I was referring to. They say that the concern among cable television systems is that hard of hearing viewers might be alarmed because some cable systems, unlike broadcast and satellite TV, cannot superimpose a visual warning saying this is a test over the government's graphic. Instead, they will only see the scrolled message, this is an emergency action notification, which gives no visual indication that it's just a test. And I cannot believe, after all this time of hysteria and mayhem and worrying about catastrophes, that we haven't figured out a way to superimpose something that says this is a test. But apparently that's where we are. Also, this is moving forward in the future. Apparently, all kinds of devices will be able to receive such tests in the future. Mobile phones, pagers, all kinds of other things. There's an integrated system that's supposedly 9 months away and is going to be tested in New York City and eventually the rest of the country.
Wait, so if I'm like outside walking around, as I actually was at 3 p.m. today.
2 p.m.
2 p.m. probably.
Oh, my God. Nobody knows that there was an emergency test.
Yeah, no one told me. So you're saying my phone would have just instantly alerted me that there was a test emergency.
Assuming you have it on, yes. Yes.
Well, you can turn phones off?
I'll show you how later. Kyle, out there in Seattle, did you hear any screaming in the streets?
No, I didn't hear any screaming in the streets, although I had KEXP on the radio in the kitchen tuned in, and I was listening to that, and I also was streaming BAI later on. So I think between the two of them, I did catch this famed test.
Well, no, if you were listening to BAI and hoping for an emergency, you were disappointed because it didn't come across here.
Okay, so
for whatever reason.
Yeah, I think that was accurate, too, because I tuned into BAI later. I'm pretty sure it was the radio in the kitchen that I heard that on. I was listening to a local community station out here, KEXP.
Mike, don't fold that piece of paper. That's an official government document you're holding there.
I won't.
All right. Just
I was just wondering if it said anything about this morning's test, and it doesn't.
No, because we never got this morning. And it wasn't this morning. It was this afternoon, 2 o'clock.
It was this morning in Seattle where Kyle is.
But you're not. All right, let's move on. Speaking of someone not telling someone something, this finally happened to me. I knew it was going to happen someday, but it finally happened. I was driving yesterday, I was driving yesterday afternoon, and I noticed it was getting dark. And I realized, you know, it's why is it getting dark now? It seemed a little early to be getting dark. And that's when I realized, I was actually talking to somebody on the phone, which I know isn't legal, but I was doing it anyway. I found out that daylight savings time ended over the weekend, and I didn't know about it. And everything was automated. Every single clock, every single device that I have knew to turn the clock back an hour. So I went blithely through 3 days without realizing that this had happened because there was absolutely nothing to tell me. Unless, you know, I was listening to a newscast about it or reading articles, which I wasn't doing because I was busy working on something else. So for the first time, and I knew this was coming, last year, the only device in my house was an analog clock. Well, that analog clock broke this year, and I replaced it with a nice digital clock that gets its time from WWV and has Celsius temperature from outside. So that clock was intelligent enough to turn back the clock an hour on its own without telling me anything. I went through 3 days without knowing.
What about your microwave?
I don't keep the time on my microwave. I don't see the point in that at all. My phone knew to turn back. Every single VCR that still works, and every single
VCR,
cable box, all those things. So, you know, I just wonder what else can they slyly change without people realizing it? Can they make Monday into Sunday, you know, and just shift things around? It's kind of frightening when something happens so transparently, you're not even aware of it.
Emmanuel,
yes,
you may remember what was it, about 4 or 5 years ago that President George W. Bush changed the time we're supposed to spring forward and fall back for daylight savings time.
Yeah, and that's too damn much power for any one person to have either,
yes,
to be able to actually change the hands of time.
Well, worse than that, some devices, like I have one of these watches that also receives a WWVB, the 60 kilohertz signal from the National Institute of Standards and Technology in Fort Collins, Colorado, like your clock does. And but the date that that it's supposed to change is hard coded into the ROM on this, in the microcontroller on this watch. So I have to wait about 3 weeks for, unless I want to manually change the time on my watch and then manually change it back 3 weeks from now, I'm stuck with this legacy of the George W. Bush administration strapped around my wrist. It's very annoying.
Yeah, that is something. But anyway, we're on standard time now. I wish we'd stay on standard time. I don't see any reason to be moving hours around. Go ahead.
So yeah, I disagree. I don't understand why we're wasting daylight. We should be saving it now when there's so little of it to go around.
All right. Well, you save it on your own and spend it later. I don't care. It's just when you move clocks around, people... It is fun, though, to make appointments with people for an hour that never happens. Like, yeah, I'll meet you at 2 a.m. on Saturday, and that's the day that they jump ahead to 3 a.m., so there is no 2 a.m. You know, it's...
Show them. You could just say, I don't want to meet with you.
Yeah, that usually follows later on. Yesterday was Election Day. Did anybody know?
I went to vote.
Yeah, I went to vote, too. And once again, it was the clumsiest system I've ever seen, where nobody knew what was going on. Everyone felt like they didn't really vote. And basically, at the end, it feels like you sent a fax, but you're not sure anybody actually got it.
Did you have anything to vote for?
I had things to vote against, and I kind of...
All right, so that's more than I had.
Yeah.
I had... In New York City, where I live, there were elections for some judges, and there were 5 slots, and there were 5 candidates, and I voted for 4 of them just for fun, but I suspect the 5th will still win also.
I just make it a point to not vote for anybody who's running both Democrat and Republican, and just to vote for anybody else, because that's the ultimate in corruption, I think.
I don't know. I showed up at 7:20 p.m. and was informed that I was the 9th voter to arrive that day.
Wow.
So they were very busy.
I can imagine. Bernie, any adventures down in Philadelphia?
Actually, I'm upstate from Philadelphia now. I was not able to vote because I'm out of the area where I normally vote. But
you sound like getting out of the area now. In fact, you're fading.
Okay. How about now?
Yeah, go back to the phone. Okay, good.
There was a very light turnout up here in Luzerne County, Pennsylvania.
Wait. What's the name of this county?
Luzerne County.
Okay. Well,
like
I can
the. Like the city in Switzerland, Lucerne.
Well, it's not spelled the same way. It's spelled with a Z.
Yeah, that's how they spell it, over there.
Over there. Over here, we spell theirs with a C.
It's very confusing.
Is it
anyway.
Swiss or...
Switzerland, yeah.
No, but in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania Swiss, is that something that...
No, it's
all
not
right.
Like Pennsylvania Dutch. It's
okay.
Or Pennsylvania
anyway, so you were upstate Pennsylvania,
yeah,
and you weren't able to vote.
It was the most beautiful possible day you could imagine,
uh-huh.
And it still was a very light turnout. But they got a new district attorney up here in Luzerne County, so that's refreshing. Yeah, I kick the old ones out. They get too much power.
Okay. So yeah, Election Day, that was something that if you blinked, you might have missed it. But something's coming up. First of all, I'm about to speak about dates, but does anybody realize that this emergency alert test came on 9/11? If you keep dates like they do in Europe, today is the 9th day of November, so they write that 9/11. Do you think that was a coincidence?
Yes.
Okay. I have nothing else to talk about then. But the date I do want to mention, though, is one that's coming up in just 2 days, and that is the 11th day of November. Now, that's Veterans Day or Remembrance Day. A lot of people pause at 11 o'clock in the morning in England, for instance. But what's interesting about this particular one, this is something that will never happen again in our lifetimes, is that the two-digit year, the two-digit month, the two-digit date are all the same number, 11, 11, 11. That's, you can't name a date where that's ever happened before. Can you? Go ahead.
What,
try
what? 10, 10, 10?
Yeah, you see, 1 and 0 are two different numbers, so you can't. You know, different. And 9, 9, 9, people didn't write 9, they wrote 0, 9, so you have 0 there.
But it will happen again in 13 months.
When?
No, sorry. No, it won't.
Because 11, 11 is the same in both the overseas and here. The next time it will happen will be in the year 22, 22. And, yeah.
Wait, in the 22nd month of that year?
Yeah, you see, it's not going to happen then either.
Your whole theory goes out the window.
No, it's never going to happen again. That's my point. It's a unique thing, and I hope that everybody's, you know, planning something really special for that. Okay. You might remember, I certainly do, last time I entered this country, I had a bit of trouble. Kyle, I think you were there.
Yeah.
All right. I got fed up with it because every time I come into the country, whether it's from Canada, whether it's from Europe or from outer space or wherever it is, I get basically searched and questioned, and I finally filed a complaint with the Department of Homeland Security. This was back in September that I did this, and they gave me a page to check my status. I'd enter my control number, and I'd check to see what was happening. And for a while, it said, in process, DHS has received your application along with the required identification documents and the signed privacy statement. We are currently reviewing the submission to determine if the delays are caused by incorrect information or mistaken identity. We will also coordinate with other federal agencies as appropriate to make this determination and to correct any errors. I mailed them all kinds of things. Well, about a little over a week ago, that changed, and the message read, status closed. DHS has completed its review of your submission. A letter was forwarded to you at the address provided in your application. Well, nothing has arrived in the mail. It's been well over a week since this notice was posted, and I just wonder what this means. Is this where it ends, where they say they mailed me something and I never get it, and I have to start all over again and go through this this hoop one more time? That's where it stands.
So the weird thing about this process is that if you can show you're not the person they're looking for, then they do something for you. But if you are the person they're looking for, then even if they shouldn't be looking for you, you have no means for appeal.
Well, at least I know why they're looking for me, supposedly.
I don't think they're going to tell you that.
Well, okay, then I want to see the letter that says, yeah, we're going to harass you every time you come into the country, and we're not going to tell you why.
Maybe they lose all those letters on purpose.
Well, I'll give it some more time, and I'll tell you what. We're not on next week. We're on 2 weeks, but when I get that letter, if I get the letter tomorrow, I'm going to hold on to it and not even open it till we're on the air. I'll open it live on the air. How's that for suspense?
Very dramatic. Have we ever had a live envelope opening on this radio program before?
We probably have. Yeah, we've done some dramatic things. What's that, Bernie?
There might be anthrax in the envelope they mail to you.
You really think DHS would stoop to that level?
Well, the little anthrax came courtesy of the U.S. government, so.
They don't like me very much. Anyway, so that's where that stands. And, of course, I'll keep everybody updated as far as that goes. You might have heard something on the internet. If you read the internet, you might have seen something on our page about some interesting events that are happening this coming weekend. We're going to take a trip down memory lane like we've never done before. Basically, what's going to happen is that we're going to revisit an event, an historic event that took place in our history. And I believe, Bernie, you were there for this.
I was there. If it's what I'm thinking.
Somehow you know what I'm going to say, yes. And Jim, you were there as well. And I think that's pretty much it for people that are on this show right now. I'm talking about the first Hackers on Planet Earth conference. It took place in August of 1994. It was 2 days long. It had one speaker track. It was the first time in this country that a major hacking event like this had taken place. There are plenty of tiny hacker conventions of, say, 100, maybe 150 people. This was the first one that had over 1,000. And it was based on the events that had taken place in other countries, specifically the Netherlands. So what we're doing this weekend, we've basically gone through our archives and found a whole lot of material that we feared might have been lost. We've digitized, we've remastered, we've put together the videos from that particular conference. And what we're going to be doing, starting Saturday afternoon at the very time that the conference began on that Saturday afternoon back in August 1994, we're going to be releasing it on the internet, hour by hour. So the 12 o'clock talk will be released at noon. The 1 o'clock talk will become live at 1 p.m. We're going to do that all weekend long from about noon to midnight each day because those are the hours that we had. And for those of you who were there, it's going to be an amazing trip down memory lane. For those of you who weren't, it's going to be really revealing. You'll see a bunch of us looking much younger. You'll see all kinds of interesting talks about things like, say, a new operating system known as Linux, an upcoming film known as Hackers, all kinds of technological issues that we might laugh at now because they might seem so primitive, or maybe things that never happened, things that never got developed. So basically, we're doing this starting at noon, and at the same time, noon on Saturday, we're also going to be offering tickets to the Next Hope Conference, the Next Hope Conference being Hope Number 9, taking place July 13, 14, and 15. We're having a very limited number of half-price tickets that will be available. You'll see all that on the website. But we're going through a service that you might have heard of to release these videos, known as BlipTV, blip.tv. And I have two co-founders of BlipTV right here in the studio with us. I want to welcome Justin Day and Jared Klett to the studios. Welcome, guys.
Hey.
Let me turn your mic on. It's only polite for me to do that. So now, we basically, and Kyle, I know you've been instrumental in getting this to work. We picked you guys to host these videos. Kyle, what would you say is the reason that we did that?
Mainly because we wanted to be able to syndicate the content in a variety of different places and basically integrate some social networking and other features. But I don't know. It basically offered a lot more flexibility just to have an account and get things up there and visible to people.
Well, YouTube has a whole lot of videos out there of every little thing that you could imagine in life, and most of them are rather short, and the quality isn't all that good. I'll let our guest explain the concept behind BlipTV, how you guys see yourself as different from, say, the mainstream.
Sure. I mean, we got our start around the same time as YouTube. We went a bit of a different direction. We wanted to be a very open platform. We always allowed the user to download the original files that they uploaded. That was a big selling point for a lot of people, that they felt, you know, secure about giving us their media, and we didn't, you know, take any rights to their content or anything else. And there was a big flap in kind of mid-2005, if I remember correctly, on the video blogging mailing list about YouTube's terms of service and how they would say basically, we reserve the right to, you know, take your stuff and rebroadcast it, or any company that follows this company, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, and the rest is history. I mean, we've, you know, grown very organically. We're a privately held company. We've always kind of stuck to those principles and, you know, just developed this business on, you know, kind of that same, you know, set of principles.
Now, what was involved in getting the project off the ground in the first place?
You know, there were four of us in the beginning. We added a fifth founder, myself and Justin, and Mike and Charles and Dina. And, you know, we just kind of bootstrapped it, you know, off of our, you know, credit cards for a year until we said, oh, you know, we've really got something here. So we raised a small, you know, angel round, and we just kind of, you know, went from there. We all quit our day jobs about a year into the project, and that was kind of scary. But we were just doing nights and weekends for a long time.
Uh-huh. Now, what kinds of people or companies, organizations have come to Blip?
We kind of run the gamut. I mean, it's like I said initially, it was just individuals doing video blogs. That was really cool to see kind of those conversations happening, and eventually, whole companies were being started around creating content. The concept of a web series came out. There was an alternative television, and we saw everyone from a couple of guys out in Chicago like doing this, as a labor of love, all the way up to somebody like Michael Eisner, backing this company to like produce this content. So it really kind of ran the gamut, but we served everyone the same. We didn't say, oh, you're Michael Eisner, so you get this extra feature or mm-hmm. something. We treated everybody the same way.
Now, I've seen some webisodes, I guess is what you call them, of various shows. Are they produced only for Blip TV? They're about maybe 10 minutes long, and they seem to have quite a following.
We don't ever enter in kind of any exclusivity agreements. If people are uploading their video to us, that's great. If they're using us, as their main player, that's great. If they're also uploading to YouTube or Vimeo or wherever, that's fine too. I don't think, but a lot of people, they do release on us exclusively by their own choice.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that one of the reasons why we chose Blip was because we were able to put a whole video up in the first place. YouTube has a limit of, I think, 10 or 15 minutes. And that, in order for us to put even one talk up, there'd have to be about four or five parts to it. And that really gets kind of clumsy after a while, especially when you're dealing with a whole bunch of talks. Even this first conference, we only have, I think, 18 talks total. But some of the later ones have up to 100. And, to have four or five parts for each one of those, it would be insane. So it's good to be able to just click on something and play the entire thing and have it look pretty decent at the same time.
Yeah, that was a decision, we kind of made early on. We saw YouTube go to the 10-minute limit, and we understood why they did it. It's to prevent people from uploading copyrighted material and things like that. And, we would just kind of remove that stuff as we saw it, on the site. And it was never really a problem for us. We kept the site really clean and generally just made it an inhospitable place for anybody that wanted to, commit that kind of copyright infringement.
Not that YouTube ever had a problem with copyright.
Oh, right, of course not. Sorry.
So, have you gotten much in the way of media exposure? As far as because everyone talks about YouTube and the YouTube phenomenon, how it helped topple dictatorships and things like that. And I don't hear the same thing about Blip. And you think you guys could also be credited with some things like that?
Well, I think we've taken a little bit of a different approach. I mean, our whole focus is on independent web series producers. And we've gotten some media coverage for being about that. And I think, the online video space is starting to settle into several niches, and web series being one of them. And I think we're a great tool because we focus so much on the web series producer and just building things for them. So we've gotten a little bit of press here and there, but yeah, obviously we're not the behemoth that is Google or YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Now, how does somebody get started with your service? What would they do in order to start producing their own episodes?
You just go to the site, blip.tv, and sign up, make an account. Fill out all your details so that we know about your show, because somebody will take a look at it and rate it and categorize it and, set it up for advertising, and then start uploading episodes.
And somehow you guys are tied into all kinds of other things, too, like TiVo.
Mm-hmm.
And Kyle and I saw Blip TV on a television set. What was
some of these internet TVs, like a Sony TV or something like that, they'll have like integrated internet capability.
Yeah, we just saw Blip TV on there, so we didn't have time to really check it out. But what kinds of capabilities does that give you and the people contributing?
Sure. So we're on a number of set-top boxes, like Sony Bravia sets and Roku boxes and on TiVo. Each one of those is the integrations are very, very different from one another. So you're likely to see, very, very varied experiences. But on a lot of them, like Roku, you can get your series on there, and people can dial you up on their TV and watch.
Very cool. Where do you see this going? I mean, I imagine things have, this has been around for 5 years now. Things must have changed quite a bit in that period of time. So I imagine the future, all kinds of things are going to be happening.
Yeah, as Justin said, we, you know, you can enable advertising on your show. We split the revenue 50-50 with the producer. We pay out every month. And, you know, we've seen some of our larger shows and networks, you know, really start to make good living and, you know, build sustainable businesses on this. So it's really just kind of, you know, building on that success and having, you know, more shows come on, you know, and kind of fostering that ecosystem where, you know, we have independent original web series being produced on any subject. You know, it runs the gamut. You know, you don't have to have advertising enabled. That's fine. But, you know, we definitely see kind of this, I hesitate to use the term, but long tail, you know, mm-hmm. coming out. You know, we have, you know, the very like high, you know, high earning shows, you know, running advertising at this end. And then at the other end, you know, there's a very niche set of content that may only have like 100 viewers per episode. But, you know, they get the same quality experience that these high end guys do. And that's, I think that's very valuable.
Now, do you get much content from different countries, or is it pretty much mostly the United States?
Yeah, we one of our longest and largest running shows is actually from China, but we see a lot of content from South America, a lot from Europe. I can't really think of any others off the top of my head.
South Korea?
Oh, South Korea, right.
Now, you go to Blip TV, how would you say, if you wanted to see Chinese shows, how would you go about looking for them?
A lot of that stuff, the series producer kind of handles their own promotion, and what they'll do is they'll take our player and embed it on their own site,
okay.
And they're actually able to brand the player with their own name and link and everything, so people don't even necessarily know that it's us hosting it and doing the ads and those sorts of things. So that allows us on our destination site to really focus on the stuff that we think sort of the audiences we're more familiar with, the US, UK audiences. That's sort of the more of the stuff that you'll feature on Blip TV, you know, proper.
Uh-huh.
We were really excited about going through all the history and seeing some of these conferences and being able to share it with people, I think, is just really, really an important and inspiring project. So we really appreciated the way we're kind of experimenting with some of these like ways of syndicating it and anyway, I don't know. It's been pretty smooth. We really enjoyed the process of getting it going.
Yeah, we are going to be doing this with all the conferences. We're trying to roll them all out, maybe one per month, if we can keep up to that, because they do get bigger and bigger. And we want to see how this one goes. Saturday, we're just going to roll it out. You'll see it on our website, either hope.net or 2600.com. It'll also be a cool way to test this this service, Blip TV. Which, you know, I've heard about in the past, but I hadn't really had any interaction with, not knowingly anyway. Like you guys say, it could be embedded on someone's site and you won't even know that someone is using your service. Now, do you have plans for new projects or expansion or anything that maybe might be different than what others are doing?
I mean, we're definitely growing. We're continuing to build upon our platform and build out new features, new functionality. We're actually hiring. We need people, so look at our careers page.
What kind of people are you looking for?
Developers, QA people, systems engineers, just technical folks of all sorts.
Cool. And you're based here in New York, right?
Based here in New York, yeah.
Awesome. Something about your background, how you got into this in the first place?
I moved to New York City in 1999, and I met our fellow co-founder, Charles Hope, and he introduced me to
really?
A mailing list.
His name is Charles Hope?
Charles Hope, yeah.
Oh, that's perfect. I honestly did not know that. Wow, that's incredible. Okay.
Yeah, he got me into a mailing list called the New York City Geeks, and we would meet every 2 weeks or so for Indian food in the East Village somewhere. And
that's always a good start.
Yeah, it was a fun list. It was a lot of, you know, you know, discussion about, you know, technical stuff, a lot of politics, things like that. Justin came to one of those dinners. I met him, and we met Mike, and that was kind of how we all got together, was this mailing list.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we'd spend nights and weekends just hacking on different stuff, coming up with different ideas, and Blip's kind of the one that stuck.
There were a lot of projects before Blip.
Now, have you been faced with some huge corporation wanting to buy you out, or has Google approached you yet? Or
we've certainly had huge corporations name us in lawsuits, but
oh, tell us about those. That's more interesting.
No, it's all been pretty benign. We were named in a patent lawsuit a while back, and it got thrown out in relatively short order. Mm-hmm. The patent was so ridiculous; it was like uploading a file to a web server. Patent.
And who tried to grab that patent? Was it someone we know, or
it was a company called like EasyNet or Easy Web, some patent troll kind of thing? But I don't think we've ever really been approached that significantly about acquisition.
We've had discussions, but we've never gotten to it.
You would know more about that than I would.
So we've had talks about.
But I get you guys want to keep running the ship yourself, at least for the immediate future.
Yeah, we've never we've never really shopped the company around. That's never really been an interest for us. You know, to me, being able to build stuff and hack on stuff that millions of people use every day is like the greatest job that I could ever want.
What advice might you give to people that are just starting out, have ideas, thinking of starting some kind of company on the internet? Anything that maybe they could learn from your experience?
I'd say just start doing stuff. Start putting it out there. Don't wait to make it perfect. Don't wait to until you have just the right feature set or whatever. Just put it out there and see what people think. Chances are your assumptions are wrong anyway, and you need that feedback.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Definitely. Justin, you're part of NYC Resistor.
Yep.
We found that out before the show. That's part of a hackerspace over in Brooklyn.
Yep.
That kind of environment, I guess, is conducive to creativity and innovation.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, Blip predates NYC Resistor a little bit, but that group has certainly fostered other startups and other great projects.
Mm. Cool. Do you guys want to give any kind of contact info? We're going to go to some phone calls, and you're welcome to stick around and talk to our listeners if they have any questions for you or on anything else. But how do people find Blip and anything else you just want to share?
You can just go to the site, blip.tv, and our email addresses are just our first names, Jared@blip.tv and
Justin@blip.tv.
Yeah.
Very cool.
We like email.
All right. I'm really looking forward to this weekend. I don't know if this is something that happens often where something like this is debuted to great fanfare. I'm not sure if there'll be great fanfare. Hopefully there will be. But for us, just being able to have a timed release like this, that actually you have a setup on your system where you can say, okay, we release this video at 2 p.m. on Saturday, November the 12th, and it'll presumably get released at exactly that time. And it's just kind of a cool thing to be able to say, wow, this talk is now happening as it happened back in 1994, 17 years ago. I imagine there's all kinds of other possible things you could do. You're basically episodic as far as the videos are released. So you could make a series yourself at your house or in your office or something like that and just put them all in the can and release them week by week or day by day at a particular time and publicize that. That alone is a cool feature, I think.
Yeah. I mean, that some of our most popular shows are people that are literally doing that.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Any kind of restrictions as far as, do you have any length restriction at all? Or
no.
You have to keep the files under a gig.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's it.
Oh, pretty cool. So blip.tv, and again, we'll be putting blip.tv/2600magazine is our page on there. Right now it has nothing because we haven't released anything, but on Saturday you're going to see that start to come to life, and all kinds of other things as well. We're starting a hacker archive of sorts of video content, not just of conferences. We have all kinds of things. It'll be growing as the weeks and months progress. Our telephone number is 212-209-2900. Bernie, we haven't heard from you in a while. Do you have any thoughts from Philadelphia?
I'm just intrigued by this system you've got, and I was wondering if you have any content restrictions that our listeners should know about.
As far as restrictions on the content itself, I mean, obviously, we don't like it if you, you know, upload the latest episode of some, you know, CBS TV show.
I mean, aside from copyright issues.
Sure. No, not really. I mean, you can talk about pretty much whatever you want. I mean, we don't put any restrictions on anything, really.
Well,
I mean,
that's not entirely true. I mean, don't upload your real estate walkthrough of a house. don't upload your blatant commercial for some product or service you're selling. you know, it has to be content. It has to be, and we'd like it to be, you know, episodic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there is... Go ahead.
I think that's why it fit for us, because the conferences come in a series, and it's an informational thing we want to share with people. So some of these new features, you know, we can use in websites and other cool stuff and just get the video hosted and share it.
No, it really is a perfect fit, yeah.
Okay, 212-209-2900 is our telephone number. We're speaking with Jared and Justin from Blip TV, and we're looking forward to Saturday at noon when the Hope Conference begins. Now, I was going to start the show, actually, by playing the episode from 1994 where the Hope Conference was going to begin the next Saturday at noon. But what we're going to do is just simply release the videos one by one, hour by hour, as they were played out back in 1994. And these are videos that have not been around, that you probably have never seen. They're also, you can also get the DVDs, but you won't get them by Saturday, I'll tell you that. So this is the best way to see them as they happen. And again, starting at noon, you'll have a chance to get half-price tickets to the next conference taking place next July. So write down www.2600.com, write down www.hope.net, write down blip.tv/2600magazine, and set your alarm clock. Make sure you've set the clock back, too, for standard time, and be up by noon, because that's when all the fun begins. All right, our phone number, 212-209-2900. Let's see who's out there. And good evening. You were on Off the Hook. Okay, let's wait for those lines to populate again. Our phones, by the way, they're making weird clicking noises, so let's not panic too much.
This phone system gets worse and worse by the week. It's really quite sad.
Yeah, it seems to. Nothing's lit up right now.
I hope that means that the phone's broken and not that our listeners don't love us anymore.
Okay, well, there is a line ringing. Let's see if this one is actually working, and hopefully the rest will ring as well. And again, we're open to pretty much anything right now because we won't be on next week. So if you have anything to share with our listeners, please make it short because we only have a few minutes left. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi. You were talking about the 11-11-11. What about December 12th of next year?
1 and 2. You see, those are different numbers. It would be 12-12-12.
Oh, yeah, right. That's right.
Yeah, you see,
yeah,
I've been...
my mind.
Yeah, and the 22, I forgot about that there's no 22nd month. But maybe by 22-22 there will be.
I had a laugh at that.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's history, so let's all enjoy it together.
Yeah, I recently heard about the show. I actually know... Firefly. I used to work with him some years back.
Rob T. Firefly, you mean?
Yes.
Ah, okay. Well, usually people don't refer to him as Firefly, but
yeah,
that's definitely. That's cool. I'm sure he's listening now.
Yes. All right. I just thought I'd give a ring.
Okay. Thanks for your call. And let's take the next one. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hello.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Ngawa. Ngawa.
Okay, well, you know, you just sort of have to make sense in our language to continue here. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi, what's on your mind?
Well, I was just wondering, like, how come we, like, the only, as far as, like, energy goes, like, we only hear about, like, it's, like, the fossil fuels that only have the real chance. Like, why don't we talk about, like, biofuels, like, putting people to work, like, giving people jobs, you know what I mean, growing stuff and producing, like, our actual energy. Like, if we're dependent on other countries, when we go to the world, wherever, we're getting the fuel from or under, you know, the ocean.
Excellent point, sir. Excellent point. Are you listening to our radio show at all? Because we aren't discussing that topic in the slightest bit. But thanks. Thanks for the call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up, please.
Hey, big fan. First time calling. Hey,
Thank you. What's on your mind?
I'm just calling to ask for the Blip TV thing.
Okay, go ahead.
Are they using the HTML5 thing for video?
We use HTML5 on our mobile offering. Unfortunately, some of the vendors that we work with haven't quite come around to using HTML5 on the desktop. So that's kind of blocking our use of that as our only player. But that's where we intend to head.
Cool.
Okay.
Like I said, big fan.
Well, thanks for your call. Thanks very much for your call. And, you know, there's something really rare about that call. It was completely on topic. And it was his first call, too. I hope he makes many more calls, because we like calls that are on topic and actually ask questions about the people in the studio.
The 1111 guy was on topic.
No, that was on topic, too. That's true. But fossil fuels? Did we mention fossil fuels at any point? I mean, they're important, yeah. Kyle, we can speak about biofuels for hours, couldn't we?
Yeah. I like biofuels.
Yeah, but let's not speak about it now, because we only have a couple of minutes left, and we're talking about technology and the internet and hackers and things like that. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi. I'm not on the air, am I?
Yes, you're on the air. Do you not want to be on the air?
Yeah, kind of not. I just want.
Okay, well, then that's it. You're not on the air anymore. Kind of not means no to me. 212-209-2900, that's the number to call. For people who want to be on the air, for people who don't want to be on the air, dial any other number, all right?
Or no number at all.
Not hard. There's yeah. Well, if you feel you have to make a phone call.
Or you could send us an email, and you won't, your voice won't be on the air, oth@2600.com.
Let's try and continue. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Ian Monroe.
I don't know. I just heard the name Monroe, and right away that made me hang up. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yeah, how you guys doing? Listen, seems like we're a little bit off topic tonight, so I just figured I'm really into science fiction. I was wondering if you guys ever really talk about that too much on the show. I listen all the time, and I just figured I'd bring it up. You know?
You need to listen to a great show called Hour of the Wolf, which is on every Tuesday night, I believe, at midnight. It used to be on at ungodly hour on Saturday morning, but it's since been moved to... wait, is it Tuesday night? No, I'm sorry. It's Wednesday. It's tonight? Yes. Is it tonight? It's tonight. Oh, my God. It's tonight. So tune in at midnight, and you'll hear Jim Freund and Hour of the Wolf. And it's probably the most amazing science fiction show and fantasy and all kinds of cool things like that you'll hear on the radio. All right. That sort of was on topic, I guess. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yeah, hi. With the daylight savings time, just try to do somebody's horoscope and try to figure out what, you know, when it's that time of the year, whether they were daylight savings or not.
Yeah.
A big pain in the neck.
I never thought of that. That's something.
So it's actually interesting because the horoscope people, the astrology people, do actually compile references for the history of daylight saving time, and the standard database, the Olson database that's used by all kinds of Unix systems and Macs and everybody, actually recently got sued by an astrology company for like taking some of the information. So this is a very strange lawsuit, and we'll see what happens.
All right, thanks for that call. You know, Mike, I don't think I ever would have expected you to be telling us anything about astrology.
I'm telling you about copyright lawsuits.
Where is this coming from?
Copyright lawsuits and time zone databases. Much more interesting than astrology, but sometimes there's overlap.
Capricorn. Oh, you know what that is. Okay.
What about it?
No, I just saw recognition in your eyes when I said that. So, okay, there's something here. I found out Bernie raises bees, and you're into astrology. I don't know what
I don't want to
kind of secrets I'm going to find out.
I don't want these vicious rumors on the radio.
Don't fold that paper.
I won't fold the paper.
All right. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead, please.
All right, since you guys are talking off topic, how about an unlimited energy source that's available anywhere across the planet that's not solar and doesn't pollute? It's available anywhere.
Okay. Sounds good. I'll bite. How do I get it?
Simple. You drill down 6 miles to the Earth.
6 miles, okay.
You hit the mantle. The mantle is molten rock.
Molten, okay, all right.
They did a drilling experiment where the drill melted at that point.
Right.
So it's simple. You drill a hole in the ground.
Okay.
Put water down. You get steam out. You run a generator. That's available all the way across the planet.
Okay, my pen ran out of ink, but I'm going to listen to the archive and get this down. Okay, good, good. Any other things we need to know?
No, that's it.
All right, see how simple it is, folks? You just got to listen to the radio, and all the world's problems will be solved. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi, good evening. I'm not sure whether this is more appropriate for the computer show or you guys, but I'll throw it out there.
Well, it's getting awfully close to the computer show, so you're right on the cusp.
Sure, I know. Is there any way that it's possible to record clips either from YouTube or your stream, any video services that allow live recording of live streaming. Some of them, even on YouTube, frozen ones, do not permit downloading or copying. Is there a workaround for that?
That's an excellent question, and it's on topic. So let's have our guests address that.
Well, we can't really speak to, you know, what you can and can't do with a YouTube stream, but our streams are not restricted in any way. It's a standard HTTP download. We're not doing anything fancy.
Mm-hmm.
You could just pull it straight off of, you know, run a, either look in your browser activity or, you know, run something like that and download the original file that you're watching right at the moment.
Sounds pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Okay.
You usually have a button, too, on your website that's just really easy to use.
Yeah.
212-209-2900. We only have a couple of minutes left. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Wow, guys. I mean, I'm not a computer expert, but I did actually listen to the show.
Cool.
You know, I just wanted to ask, how is Blip TV playing into the independent media movement, like with Occupy Wall Street and all these kinds of things stirring up all over the place? Are there people also using this to make alternative news sources?
Sure, sure. I think Democracy Now! Actually hosts a video version of their show on Blip. And a number of other shows that are covering this, that sort of stuff, are using our platform, and whomever would like to is free to.
Yeah, it's a lot of potential. I know people are clamoring for a video version of Off the Hook. I'm not sure that's going to happen, but if we did decide to do that, it seems like it would be made for something like what you guys offer. All right, let's try to get through these calls. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi, I caught the last part of your show, and I don't know what your guests do.
Oh, okay. Well, this is a good chance to sum up what you guys actually do.
Go ahead. All right. So we are part of a company called Bliptop TV. It's a online video host for people making independent web series. We help independent web series producers do everything that isn't production. So we host the video. We help them distribute it. We help them promote it. And then we help them monetize it if they want by putting ads in the videos and splitting the revenues 50-50.
And if they choose not to have ads, you still host it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, same deal.
Cool. All right. And again, we're releasing the videos from the first Help Conference this coming Saturday, starting at noon. You'll see the links on our main 2600.com webpage or hope.net, or you can just go straight to BlipTV/2600magazine. And, of course, we will have that special limited half-price deal for the next conference known as Hope Number 9, taking place July 13th through 15th. Hope you guys will be there as well. Any final words from anybody before we sign off for 2 weeks as far as content or contact information?
2 weeks? What's on next week
next
instead?
Next week is a special National Pacifica programming day.
Oh.
Yeah, from the Pacifica Archives. Speaking of archives.
They're nice people.
They certainly are. They make this place possible. All right, well, Jared, Justin, I want to thank you. Best of luck to you, and I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot more from you in the future. And looking forward to Saturday when we actually get to use your system and see how it works. If it can, is it going to crash under the weight of all these people tuning in at the same time for the same thing?
Let's hope not.
All right, well, that's one way to find out. All right, you can write to us, oth@2600.com, with your comments, questions, theories, whatnot. We'd like to hear from our listeners. Again, we won't be back for another 2 weeks, preempted next week. Going out with another Occupy Wall Street type song. And again, please, if you know of any, please email us, oth@2600.com. This one comes from Citizen Rage. Good night.
Und wenige viel, wird's Zeit für Signal und ein gemeinsames Ziel. Besetzt Plätze und Paläste im Osten und Westen. Heute wird es Zeit, das Kapital zu testen. Wir beenden es heute, die Banken zu mästen. Besetzt Plätze und Paläste im Osten und Westen. Occupy, yeah, Occupy. Die Zeit besänftigender Reden ist vorbei. Occupy, yeah, Occupy. Protestiert friedlich, dann hört jeder den Schrei. Occupy, yeah, Occupy. Die Zeit des Lobbyismus ist lange vorbei. Occupy, yeah, Occupy. Protestiert friedlich, dann hört jeder den Schrei. verzockt und dafür gut kassiert. Der ist es nicht wert, dass man ihn gegenfinanziert. Manchmal fragt man sich, ob noch das Volk regiert, wenn in der Lobbypolitik das Kapital triumphiert. Ihr Banker spielt und jongliert mit Finanzderivaten. Nur für den Profit habt ihr uns verkauft und verraten. Doch wenn ihr gewinnt, dann gewinnt nur ihr. Und wenn ihr verliert, dann zahlen wir. Occupy, yeah, Occupy. Die Zeit besänftigender Reden ist vorbei. Occupy, yeah, Occupy. Protestiert friedlich, dann hört jeder den Schrei. Occupy, yeah, Occupy. Die Zeit des Lobbyismus ist lange vorbei. Occupy, yeah, Occupy. Protestiert friedlich, dann hört jeder den Schrei. Banker bunkern Boni auch, wenn ihre Banken schließen. Das geht so lange weiter, wie die Gelder fließen. Gibt's eine Inflation, investieren wir in Devisen. Wir können nur verlieren, der Markt sei gepriesen. Eure Boni sind doch nur der Lohn für Raub und Betrug. Schämt euch in Grund und Boden, doch das ist uns nicht genug. Wir wollen ein Ende eurer Spekulation. Lang genug waren wir Lämmer und ernteten Hohn. Occupy, yeah, Occupy. Die Zeit besänftigender Reden ist vorbei. Occupy, yeah, Occupy. Protestiert friedlich, dann hört jeder den Schrei. Occupy, yeah, Occupy. Die Zeit des Lobbyismus ist lange vorbei. Occupy, yeah, Occupy. Protestiert friedlich, dann hört jeder den Schrei. Occupy, yeah, Occupy. Die Zeit besänftigender Reden ist vorbei. Occupy, yeah, Occupy. Protestiert friedlich, dann hört jeder den Schrei. Occupy, yeah, Occupy. Die Zeit des Lobbyismus ist lange vorbei. Occupy, yeah, Occupy. Protestiert friedlich, dann hört jeder den Schrei.
Citizen Rage, that's what that was. Yeah, you know, you say they need a revolution. Well, revolution is just, you know, what they've had in Egypt and all in the Middle East. That's what they do. They do that a lot. It's all about the dollars. It's all about the money, corporate greed. Everybody get used to that. That's what they want. The empire. The empire. The mighty empire. Yep, that's what we do here at WBAI. So like I was saying, what do we have here?
Hi, my name is Asif Muhammad. When I'm in New York, I always have my radio tuned to 99.5 FM, WBAI. When I'm traveling, I listen on the web at wbai.org.
Right, all right, that's right. Look what time it is. Do you know what time it is? It's 8 o'clock. And when it's 8 o'clock here at WBAI New York 99.5 FM on November the 9th, 2011, then that means it's time for the Personal Computer Shoebox. Take it away.
And Stevie DB, I thank you for that intro. What are you smoking these days, man? I want some of that stuff. That's right. Cool.
I'm sure
that's
you right. Do.
Listen, Hank is with me. This is Joe King, in case you didn't know it. He got me so confused with that intro. This is Joe King. This is the Personal Computer Show on WBAI. Hank Key is in my studio in here with me. He's on my right. Oh, he certainly is. And on the left coast.
Almost.
On the left coast is David Perry.
David, how you doing? David, as you know, is the
director of public education for Trend Microcomputer. Is that him? Are we here?
Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we cover something while we're waiting for him, Joe?
Well, what on earth is there to cover, Hank?
Well, there was a big announcement last week, and that's Barnes & Noble. Barnes & Noble came out with a new Nook Color unit, and it's the same price as the old one, except that it's speedier, has double the amount of storage, and it's going to be very interesting because it's really, in a sense, very closely matched to the Kindle Fire. And what I was a little amazed by was that I'm reading some preliminary figures, and that the combined sales of Barnes & Noble's Nook Color, the new one, and the Kindle Fire, they expect somewhere between now and the end of the year about 6 to 7 million units to be sold. And in total, they said the total market is about 30 million, and that's a pretty high number. But but that's going to be interesting because I know that many people have taken the original Barnes & Noble Nook Color and they basically modified it to run Android 2.2 or 2.3.
Well, it doesn't have to be modified because they're now selling it with Android. Yes. It's a dual. But the thing I want to point out, Hank, which you failed to mention, is we're talking about tablets. These are not computers. These are tablets.
Well, you know, what is a tablet? Is it 7 inches, 5 inches?
No. What is a computer? Is it 14 inches? Is it 15 inches? That's not the question.
I think your smartphone is a computer then.
That is correct. And my smartphone that I have, it's a Samsung. It's not a Nook. But it's got more power and more smarts than the first couple of computers I owned.
Now, wait a minute. I have a cell phone that is about 6 years old, and it's got something you don't have. And you're looking at me with a dumb look.
No, because the things that I was about to say, I would have been accused of being anti-Hank if I had said.
Well,
I'll tell you what my cell phone has that your cell phone doesn't have.
Wait, let me tell you what my cell phone has that you would envy, okay? I only charge it up once a week.
You don't use it, though, Hank.
No, I do. I use it every day, and I only charge up once a week.
No, you don't use it.
No, I do use it. I use quite a number of minutes, okay?
You use minutes, but that's not using it. That's just talking
it's always
on it.
It's always that's on. By the way, how often you charge yours? Once a month?
No, I charge – well, my cell phone, I charge every night because when I stop using it, I plug it in for the night. But I don't have to. Actually, I can probably plug it in every other night, and that would be fine.
Well, one of the big complaints.
But ask me how come, because you heard me complaining about the battery.
That's right. And by the way.
And not only am I complaining about the battery, but everybody out there who has one of these 4G smartphones is complaining about the battery. But I stopped complaining. You know what I did?
What?
I bought a bigger battery.
Oh, okay. Now, the reason why I bring it up is because Apple, as you know, they had recently announced the iPhone 4S. And a big complaint is that there is dramatic battery drain. And Apple says it's not the phone, but they do know what the problem is.
Siri.
No, it's not. They say it is not the phone that's causing the battery drain. It's the iOS 5 operating system.
Yeah, that's
Wait a minute. Who's responsible for iOS 5?
But that's also fancy.
David's responsible.
It's a very fancy.
It's all
way.
My fault.
I'm sure
you know,
it is.
I don't
David.
Notice this problem on my iPhone 4S.
Well, you know, the funny thing, David, is today on the Today Show, which is here in New York, Channel 4, it's the NBC network Today Show.
Yeah.
Kathy Lee Gifford and...
Noted computer expert.
And Hoda Kotb.
Yeah.
And Hoda pulled out her new iPhone 4S and said, this thing is fantastic. I got to show – this is so wonderful. I've got to – and Kathy Lee said, wait, we didn't rehearse this. She said, it's so wonderful. I've got to show everybody that this is a brand new thing. She said, let me show. And she readjusted her microphone and held up the phone so the microphone would pick everything up and the camera would pick up the screen. And she started talking to Siri. And you know what Siri did?
No.
Siri said, don't understand. Would you repeat that? That's not in the – that doesn't work here. No, you can't do that. The whole five-minute segment, they could not get it to work.
Yes.
If I was Apple, I would sue them.
You know what I found is you can ask any of the questions that are on the TV ad.
Really?
What does a weasel look like, for example? Will always work.
Well,
but there's a bunch of stuff in Siri that's mysterious. There's a – you can say, Siri, tell me a story. And some people, Siri will tell a story. And other people, Siri will not tell a story.
Well, I think the important thing came out of as a formal announcement out of Apple today, or perhaps it was yesterday, but I read it today. They do not intend to retrofit any of the iPhones with Siri.
No.
And if that's the way they're going to be, I'm going to stick with my Android, which also has very, very good...
Joe, you would stick with your Android if they were giving away dates with Paula Prentice.
Possibly.
I don't know where I pulled Paula Prentice's name out of the air.
I was thinking about it. My wife really likes her iPhone, and she uses it for... You know, all the different things that one would want to use it for. And she would be happy to have Siri. But when she saw the things that I don't have Siri, nor does she, but I do have Swipe, which she doesn't have, and I do have voice activation, I can do voice searching and voice. I got a wonderful program that lets me dictate my shopping list to it, and
well, you know,
it doesn't
Google,
miss.
Both the Google on Android and the Google on iPhone has had speech to text forever.
For a long time, yeah.
Yeah, and it works really well. It works the same way Siri does. It's doing the translation in the cloud. It's sending up an audio recording of your voice.
Didn't know that.
And it's doing it at the data center, and so is Siri. And
well,
so
but,
Siri...
Well, wait a minute. If that's what's happening, how am I able to dictate into my shopping list when I'm not online?
Well, that's not the Google app. Neither is it Siri.
Oh, okay. Hank, you got something besides this? Because
yeah,
you're totally bored.
No, I'm not. I have a question that I'm going to ask David, okay? And can you, in layman term, explain what is this story about where the FBI arrested six Estonians?
For almost 6 years now, they've been tracking these eight guys in Estonia.
Oh, the headline is six.
I know.
There's just eight of them?
And they've been tracking them for 6 years.
For what? For what reason?
And let me, I was going to tell you that.
You're interrupting, Hank.
These guys have been clickjacking. These are the big clickjacking mob, and they've been making 25 or 30 million a year.
Stealing clicks.
And what that means, basically, and this is what's funny, is many end users won't see the harm in this. Instead of seeing the ad when you go to the CNN website that CNN sold, you're seeing an ad that these Russian guys, these Estonian guys sold. So instead of seeing, say, the Ford Motor Company ad, you would see an ad for Viagra that they had sold. And
Wait a minute. Do they sell Viagra? Is that a good product? Because they were offering me a very good price on it.
Yeah, well, they're selling the ad space. They're not selling the product.
I know what the product will do if I take the product. What benefit do I get out of the ad?
It took the FBI 6 years to build a case?
Yeah.
Wow. How come?
Because it started out as a very small thing. They found a problem with a DNS redirect, and they had to back it down and see who was actually doing it. It took a long time to do that, and then it took a long time to document it. And then they found out that they were into all kinds of different crimes. If you read the FBI press release, the head guy's being charged with like 30 or 40 different crimes.
Yeah, but
he's looking at 45 years in prison here in the U.S.
Wait a minute. They're Estonians. Where do they live?
In Estonia.
So what good is – what kind of
– They're being extradited.
Are they really?
Oh, they are.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
The Estonian government's really going to ship them over here?
Oh, yeah. See, the Estonians, when a cyber criminal or anybody there in Eastern Europe, when a cyber criminal gets caught, they're a bad guy for getting caught. Oh, my gosh, you're going to give us a bad reputation over here. We're going to send you off to America to stand trial. So they're on their way.
There you go. Now, I understand from the press release that your people were involved.
Yeah, I was going to bring one of our guys on from the labs to talk about it. And, yes, our people were involved. We don't talk about these things until the law enforcement agency that we're working with says it's okay.
And you don't want to bias any pending trial either.
Yes,
no,
you do.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. He does. No, he's not a nice guy. He would bias whatever he could.
To be more pro-Apple? Is that what I would bias?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
Hank, what else do we have?
We have another Apple story, actually. Or actually, it's the Adobe Flash.
It's not an Apple story. It's a Steve Jobs legacy.
Well, what happened was that Joe sent me a news item about the fact that Adobe's going to abandon the mobile Flash effort, the whole development itself. And my comment was, you know, this was a very reputable company. And I say it was because every day I'm getting updates on Flash on the desktop. And I'm saying, what the heck kind of company is this where there are
huge
updates every day?
Security problems.
I mean, every
huge
day there's an update?
Security problems.
I mean, why don't they just backtrack and just close out some of the things that you can't do and just say, hey, this is the version that works?
Well, really, if you wanted to fix the kind of problems that they have, you would shut down the entire product and rebuild it from the ground up and not in C, because they're having C-related security problems.
Well, let me interrupt for a moment, because, David...
We can pause for a moment and remember Dennis Ritchie?
Yes,
well, we did that already.
We did that.
Yeah.
But I do want to point out that David Perry of the Trend Microcomputer Corporation has been on this program for lo these many, many, many moons. And back when in 2010, when Steve Jobs issued his 1,700-word polemic against Adobe Flash and said it would never, ever darken his door nor be on an iPhone, nobody jumped up and down here. Hank didn't.
You did.
I'm nobody.
You kept
your mouth shut. Stevie D be the world's leading expert. He shares that title with Professor Irwin Corey.
I agree.
Yeah.